Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. It's Monday, July 13th, 2020. Stephen St. John, Nate Bucati, and Jake Otero is now joined by Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star. What's up, Sam? How are you?
I'm great, man. How are you?
Doing wonderful. Sam Mellinger on the line with us. That's right. That's exactly right. All right, Sam, we've got a lot of stuff on the list to talk about. Let's start off with Sporting Kansas City. I called it a debacle. Nate said they capitulated. Jake said it was a disaster. And then Todd Lebo made up a word that was nonsensical, but we agreed it fit. And so you're the headline writer. How do you describe what happened in the final minutes of that game last night?
Those are all good. I really like capitulate. I think that fits really well with, they controlled that game early, throughout the first half, really. And then, to give it up, it was in the 98th minute, right? Just to give it up that late is just a heartbreaker, especially when, you still have to play the games, right? But when you're the clearly better team and it happens like that, that's just that's a heartbreaker.
So, what did you think of the red card?
Listen, he is heartbroken. He could barely get a word out. Listen to this.
You should have seen his face. He's like,
I'm still hurting from this one.
It's like, here's your mouth is constipated.
Here's
the thing. You can't get a word out.
You
like that one, Jake? What? It was like his mouth was constipated. He's like,
If you know one thing about me, Stephen, you know that I'm never constipated.
Right. Your mouth is. In that moment.
That's right.
God, that's brilliant wording. God, Stephen.
I don't know about you guys. I know that soccer and sport in Kansas City means more to me probably than most of you, Jake even included, because I care about soccer way more than Jake. I'm kidding.
No, you're not.
But I have missed. I have been looking forward to the chance to broadcast a game for 4 months. I have missed it terribly. It's a part of my soul that I've been missing. I've looked forward so much to the game last night, and to be honest with you, the whole time there was this nervousness until like kickoff. I was like, I'm gonna believe fully that I'm broadcasting this game when it actually starts. Because if you guys didn't see, MLS had another game postponed yesterday morning because of a couple of positive COVID tests. Sporting Kansas City reportedly, and they put out there that they had a positive COVID test this past week. And with the way things have gone so far, two teams have already been sent home there. Another game being postponed that day. There was a part of me that's like, I don't even know if I'm going to get to call this game. I mean, you talk about like the idea of taking nothing for granted in life. Like, if this hasn't taught you to take nothing for granted when it comes to getting to watch a sporting event that you want to watch, I don't know what would. So like all of this build up, and I'm so excited for this game and to finally have something to call and to watch and to cheer for, and then to have it go like that. I mean, I was just in a rotten mood when I drove home last night, and yes, I'm still, yes, Stephen, I'm a little constipated emotionally right now.
See?
Is that a
use that in the column,
thing?
Sam.
I don't know. I've never said that before, but
I've never said it. It just felt right. I do think Nate does bring up, Nate and pooping is kind of synonymous with that.
Right.
That's what I was.
It's usually diarrhea of the mouth, not constipation of the mouth.
I'm the opposite.
Right. Sam, follow that up. I don't know how you can, but go ahead.
Have you ever felt emotionally constipated before?
No. Look, dude, like, this doesn't happen very often where I hear something, like, a phrase like that for the very first time, but it makes perfect sense. Like, that, it's been a while. It's been a while, so thank you for that. constipated emotionally. I'm going to try and work that in someday. Wow, no pun intended. Yeah, I mean, it just, the red, so somebody just mentioned the red card a little earlier. I don't know. Like, that seems like a soft card. Melia came out and a little hesitated just for a second, but I just don't know that that's a red. But anyway, I mean, it's just, here's what I think adds to some of what Nate has been talking about is, like, all that buildup that Nate's felt, that a lot of us have felt for sports in general, for soccer in particular, all of it, sporting, you know what I mean? Like, I think about that and, you know, everything they've done, and they're not unique, but, you know, there's a lot of teams in MLS that are trying to do the right things, but, you know, to, you know, be as, mind your details as much as possible, you know, distance, like, do training. They were, you know, early back on training, by all indications, like, doing things the right way, and this uncertainty that I think it was Nate that just mentioned about, you know, game getting canceled in the morning, and, you know, two teams, Nashville and Dallas, getting sent home and all these things. But Sporting has done everything the right way, right? Like, the, you know, they had a positive test. Okay, you remove the guy, but we're still rolling. We're doing it right. And then just to have the game play out like that. I mean, sports is all about, you know, overcoming those things, right? And not letting one mistake become two, and not letting one loss become two. So they'll be challenged in that way. But it's just, you know, if what's an announce? I mean, it's just like if you wait for Christmas or something, and then you open it up, and it's just like a bag of dew, and that's what you got for Christmas. I mean, that's kind of, you know, if we can continue on this, like, constipation at the show,
right?
You know, maybe that's the best one I can come up with at the moment. But I mean, just like that loss would suck if it was, you know, just the 14th game of a normal season. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah,
that would suck. You lose to an inferior team, and you do it in that way, you know, with your keeper getting a red and then giving it up late like that. That would always suck. That would never not suck. If you were down in the standings, that loss would suck. But to have it in this moment with, you know, what it could be, you know, the best team that Sporting has had in years after, what, a four-month break, and you're looking forward to it this much, and a lose like that is just a, you know, just a kick where it hurts.
Here I am to save the day, and I I don't always go to the text line for help, but here I am. The text line wants Nate to feel better, so they said have Nate talk about Arsenal. That will make him feel better.
Ugh.
Wow.
Oh, I guess not. Oh, that's right. They lost. Damn. I don't trust the text line. Moving on, I'm sorry. That was not nice.
But you know what? I expect that from Arsenal. To be honest with you, like, as an Arsenal fan, and Sam knows my pain there. Like, I know that that's what they're capable of. So it's like, it's frustrating, but it's kind of expected, you know? Whereas, like, with Sporting, it's like, I honestly, it's still possible. All they got to do is get through the group, and then everything resets, and it's knockout round from there. So they've got to find a way to bounce back. But I look at Sporting, and I thought going into this, I was telling Jacob Peterson before the game, I think if I were a gambling man, I think I'd put my money on Sporting Kansas City to win this whole thing. Because of all the stuff that Sam said, I think they're going to be the most prepared team. I think they're going to be the sharpest team. I think they have a good team on their hands. I think they will go to try to win this thing because that's what Peter Vermes' teams try to do. And then that's what they look like for the first 60 minutes of that game. And then to lose it that way is that hurts a lot more than if you go in thinking, you know what, my team's probably going to rip my heart out and blow it. That doesn't hurt as bad, you know. So, but I mean, they still have two games left to play for, and they did, and I do think they're a good team. I mean, I still believe Sporting Kansas City are a good team. So, I'm going to
I mean, you bring up a good point about it resetting, because, like, if what we thought, you know, yesterday before 7 o'clock is still true, that they are a really good team and maybe best position of anybody to win this thing, then losing one game even to that team in that way shouldn't matter. You should be able to come back. You should be able to, you know, if Sporting is what we think they are mentally, if they are, you know, as prepared as we think, then it shouldn't matter. They should be able to get through. But it was just, that should have been a win that you get because you're the clearly superior team. You should be able to play your C game, and they can play their B-plus game, and you still win.
I am going to be interested to see what the reaction is like, you know, because of everything that you just said emotionally for us. That's got to be very similar for the players too. When you've gone,
and they don't have the goalkeeper next game.
Yeah, Tim Mealy is going to be suspended for that game. So,
yeah.
Let's move on to something a little bit more upbeat. Sam Mellinger, you know, the deadline for the Chiefs and Chris Jones to sign a contract extension is Wednesday at 3 o'clock, and he was in town doing an autograph signing and appearance this weekend, and he's been quite active on Twitter. And then ESPN's Jeremy Fowler reported that the Chiefs and Jones have begun talking after not talking for quite a while, so that obviously is a positive. Does this give you optimism that the Chiefs and Chris Jones could sign a long-term deal before Wednesday's deadline?
They could. I guess I'm in the same place that I have been, that I do believe that the Chiefs value Chris and think of him as a cornerstone and want him around. And I do believe that Chris genuinely enjoys this team and the fans. I think that he sees the value in playing for potentially the next dynasty. And at the very least, a team that you would expect to make the playoffs pretty much every year and be a contender most years. So there's a mutual sort of, sometimes what you hear from agents and executives in these situations is like, where there's a will, there's a way. Like that's a term that people in the business, you know, can kind of kick around sometimes. And what that means is basically you need both sides to be into it. You know, you can't just have one side pushing for it and the other side, you know, neutral or whatever. And so I do think that they have this, but what I don't know that they have is, you know, where there's a will, there's a way was 100% with Patrick Mahomes, for instance. I mean, both sides were all in. And they were always going to make sure they did everything possible, you know, to find that middle ground and to, you know, create a contract that nobody had really ever done before. You know, that was always going to happen because both sides needed it to happen. I don't know that level exists with this. Like, I think that Chris wants to be here, but not so much that he's going to take 80 or 90% of what he believes his open market value is. I think the Chiefs want him here, but I'm not sure that it's enough that it's, you know, $21 million, that it's the, you know, the Forrest Buckner contract or, you know, what they gave Frank Clark. You know what I mean? So I wonder if there's still a gap in the middle there. And all that said, and we haven't talked about the, you know, the salary cap. And I know it's, you know, the salary cap can be altered and it can be molded a little bit, but at some point I don't know that you can pay $500 million to your quarterback, a bunch of money to Tyreek Hill, a bunch of money to Travis Kelce, a bunch of money to Tyrann Mathieu, a bunch of money to Frank Clark, on and on it goes. It just, at some point, you know, there's a limit, you know, there is a cap, a literal cap that you have to mind at some point. So I think both sides want it to happen. I just don't know that, you know, functionally, that it's going to work.
What do you think about the decision to bring back Matt Moore?
It's good. I mean, like that quarterback room worked, right? And Matt Moore stepped up when they needed him. Depending on how you count that Broncos game, if memory serves, was it 10-3 when Mahomes got hurt? I think it was 10-3. So it's still somewhat in doubt. So they won 2 out of 3 games that Matt Moore played. And I think more importantly, there's better backup quarterbacks that you could get than Matt Moore, Chad Henne, whoever ends up winning that. But to me, it has always been about who can be, who, it's not about when the backup plays. I mean, that can be important. You need them to get through a game or two like we saw last season. But I think there's also an element of you want to make sure whoever's in that room with your unicorn can help bring out his best when he plays. And so, with that in mind, I'm all for just the quarterbacks who have seen the most defenses. You know what I mean? The quarterbacks who have been in the league a long time and have seen the tricks that different coordinators try to throw at you and can help Patrick, and he's sharp as a tack anyway. But just give him every little edge possible. I love that thinking. It makes total sense to me. So I'm all for it.
We've got Sam Mellinger on the line from the Kansas City Star. Back into this on WHB. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez and Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star on this Monday, July 13th, 2020. Sam, have you ever responded to an email from a U.S. senator with the simple words, F you?
No, but I've been on the receiving end of a few of those.
Right. That's exactly right. But Adrian Wojnarowski is now suspended with no pay for responding to that press release from Senator Josh Hawley from Missouri to his press release dealing with the NBA and China. So do you think that ESPN should have suspended Woj?
I don't know. It was unprofessional. He shouldn't have done it. It was a mistake. It's hard to answer. It just gets so politicized immediately. You know what I mean? The whole thing right off the bat and what Woj was responding to was political. The decision to post that, screenshot the email and post it on Twitter or whatever, political. So once it gets into that sphere, sort of logic doesn't really matter. So ESPN's probably doing what they feel like they have to protect themselves. That's how these things go. To me, is that a suspendable offense? To me, it's not, but I'm pretty hard to offend. You know what I mean? So, but I get it. And once you do that, I think it's out of your control. I don't think you can complain. You know what I mean? And, I've certainly done a thing or two that was close enough to suspendable that it's out of my control. And so far, I've been lucky, but I understand that didn't always have to be.
Sam Mellinger is our guest. All right, Sam, let's talk baseball for a little bit. Salvi tested positive for coronavirus. So did Cam Gallagher. Valoria was already on the IL, non-COVID related. And so we are seeing the Royals catching depth chart decimated right now. Dayton Moore was on a Zoom call yesterday and answered Todd Lebel's question about his optimism about the baseball season starting on time, and Dayton Moore was extremely optimistic. We talked to Buster only every week, and he is very pessimistic, so we get it from both sides. How are you feeling right now about baseball's return, considering what's happened the past few days, even with the Royals?
Yeah, I mean, I'm at the same place that I've been, and I think I've said this on this fine radio program that I'm confident they're going to start. I'm not sure what to say if you're going to ask me if they'll finish. I do think that there's a lot of reasons, and let's not be naive. A lot of it is money, and not just what happens this year, but you know, Major League Baseball knows that it can't just sit out an entire season and expect next year to just be roses, even assuming there's a vaccine, which is still far from certain, obviously. So there's a lot of other stuff going on, but I'm corny enough to believe in, you know, the power of sports and those things returning. And I think that we need to do everything we can to get as close to normal as we can. And, you know, within reason, that doesn't mean like, let's go to concerts and let's not wear masks and, you know, silly stuff like that. But I think that we can get to, let me rephrase it. I think we owe it to ourselves to do everything that we can to get as close to normal as we can. And part of that is baseball. And if you go through the protocols, you know, epidemiologists and health experts will tell you, like, you should do a bubble. You know, you should do what the NBA, MLS, NHL are doing, have done. Obviously, that's not perfect. You know, that's not impenetrable, but it's a better bet than what Major League Baseball is attempting to do. That being said, you know, I think everything else that Major League Baseball is doing makes sense. They've had the testing snafus, which are just an unforced error by the league, and I will never be convinced that those weren't made more likely to happen based on Major League Baseball spending so much of its energy and brain power in the last 3 months fighting over dollars rather than trying to, you know, make sure that that every last detail of the return protocols are as tight as possible. So, you know, that being said, there are always going to be positive tests and you know, that's part of getting back to work. Major League Baseball players certainly aren't the only people that are being asked to return to work in a form that, you know, we may end up with some positive tests. The one thing they have at their advantage is one of the things they have at their advantage is that the environment in which they are returning is safer than, say, a bartender, you know, a server at a restaurant. They certainly have tighter protocols than a lot of other people being asked to go to work. So it's not, oh my God, there's X number of positive tests. It's okay. What would that number be without a return? You know, because these guys are going to be out living their lives anyway. So can you make Major League Baseball? Can you make this? I'm not going to say bubble. Can you make this environment in which they are being asked to return to work no worse than as risky as if they were just living their lives out in the community? I'm not articulating this perfectly, far from it, per use, but I hope you understand what I'm trying to say.
So it is so complicated. I you know, talking to people that are down in the Orlando bubble, you know, Sporting Kansas City has a player test positive, and there are certain guys that have a lot of anxiety about that because
sure.
We know that the doctors say that you can be a carrier for several days before you result in a positive test. So let's say, you know, Cam Gallagher, for example, just tested positive. Was he contagious for 5 days with the team, working out with them and doing all that stuff before he tested positive? Baseball is a sport that allows for a little more social distancing while you participate in it, so maybe you feel a bit better. The flip side is, like you said, the rest of us in the world are kind of going to work on a daily basis not knowing if anyone around us has it, because most of us are living in an environment where not all of us are getting tested on a regular basis. And I don't know, like, does that make it better or worse? Like, the devil you know versus the devil you don't know. I wanted to read a quote to you and see what your reaction to this is, because I don't know the answer to any of this. Paul Tenorio writes about MLS and was talking about, like, for example, Sporting Kansas City, their players are going to get tested every day now for 14 days because they had a teammate test positive. I guess the other guys in the bubble, the protocol in MLS is, if no one on your team is testing positive, then you just get tested. I think it's every other day or something like that. This quote from a doctor says, to be using up that many tests when, you know, there's a real long lag time for the general population on testing, and it's difficult to get in to get testing in certain places. We saw pictures of lines miles long in Arizona right now for people trying to get tests. This quote from a doctor said, "It's a massive allocation of resources in the middle of a pandemic." As a person like us who always wants sports back, what's your reaction to a doctor saying this is not a good usage of all the testing to be testing all these athletes on a daily basis?
I'm empathetic to it. I really am. I understand where he's coming from. What I don't know, Major League Baseball's plan, and I don't know if this has been carried through in real time, if this is still true today, but Major League Baseball's plan was to make sure that their protocols, that their return was a net positive in those communities. And what that means is they're doing testing for their teams. They're doing testing for their players, for their coaches, for their staff, but they're also doing some testing for the general public in those markets, in those home markets. That was the plan, and that was part of, you know, what at least that I've heard from, you know, some health experts saying, okay, like that's a way to get around it. You're throwing money at it, right? Like let's be clear what's happening here. But in that way, because Major League Baseball, they're using their own lab. Mm-hmm. That's another big difference. I don't think MLS is using their own lab, and I don't think that the NBA is. They've switched around labs a couple times, but Major League Baseball is using their own lab, and so they're not taking away from the general public. Now, you could say, well, why don't they use their own lab and do general, you know, just general public instead of backing up, you know, with Major League Baseball players? And I get it, but they're also a business. You know what I mean? And they've got their money and they can spend it, you know, how they want. It's tough for me to argue against that if they really are doing general public tests. That's different. You were talking about specifically MLS.
That's where the quote came from the article. So
yeah, and that is different, and I am empathetic to that. And I don't have a response that's, you know, that's, well, because it sounds crass, right? Like it sounds like, well, these guys are there to entertain us, and so that's why they're getting the testing. But that's the truth. I guess the truth is crass.
We have Sam Mellinger from the Kansas City Star. Before we break, Sam, this morning the Washington Redskins have sent out an official release, and I will just read it to you and get your response. On July 3rd, we announced the commencement of a thorough review of the team's name. That review has begun in earnest. As part of this process, we want to keep our sponsors, fans, and community apprised of our thinking as we go forward. Today, we are announcing we will be retiring the Redskins' name and logo upon completion of this review. Dan Snyder and Coach Rivera are working closely to develop a new name and design approach that will enhance the standing of our proud tradition, rich franchise, and inspire our sponsors, fans, and community for the next 100 years. Sam Mellinger, your response to that release this morning.
Like, dude, I can't help but kind of chuckle that sponsors are before fans and community there. Like, at least they're honest.
That's who made it happen.
Yeah, at least they're honest about why this is happening. I believe that it's long overdue. I know that there's no one consensus, unanimous. There is a consensus. There's not a unanimous opinion on this in the Native American community. I get that, but just that name has always been sort of a tier of one to me. And you know, then the Indians, you know, I'm just thinking about this from a Kansas City perspective, right? And then the next tier below that is our hometown football team. I saw where the Atlanta Braves sent an email, I assume, communication one way or the other to season ticket holders saying, we will never change the name. We will be the Atlanta Braves forever. That to me, at least on the surface, is a defensible position. You know, especially if you start looking at things like the chop and images and, you know, just the way of sort of presenting yourself. So that's where my head goes.
Isn't it dangerous to say forever though? I mean, yeah. I mean, that just anytime you say, like Dan Snyder 7 years ago said, we'll never change it. Never. I mean, when you put statements like it'll be this way forever and we'll
You're tempting the fates.
Yeah, you know, we're never going to do this. Yet 7 years later, he's doing this. And so it's like the Braves, I understand what they're doing and why they would do it. But it's like, man, that's why.
All of their sponsors decide we're not going to support you, yeah, they will.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, they will.
So it's just like, you know.
No, 100%. Yeah, if Truist, right, that's the name of their new stadium. If Truist decides, like, we don't want to be the Braves anymore, then the decision from the team is either go find a new title sponsor or change the name.
And I'm not suggesting they should, but what we know in this country is that money talks. I mean, everything we've talked about right now has come down to money. Like every single topic of conversation 100%. That we've covered, you know?
The tomahawk chop has come down to money. The tomahawk chop, you know, at some point, I forgot when it was, I think it was in the 90s, right, where the Chiefs said, you know, we're not going to do this anymore. But don't quote me on the 90s, but at some point the Chiefs did that. And then fans, you know, got pissed. And wrote letters and just overwhelmingly expressed their disappointment or anger with that decision. Fans have money, so the chop came back. I mean, it's all sort of trying to read the winds here. And not just with a name change, right? Like never say never with anything, but it's all you're trying to read the winds. And I think the Redskins have decided. You know, I would say. Much later than they should have been. This should have been done and dusted years ago. But you know, FedEx has spoken, right? Nike has spoken. I think Amazon took all their gear off the website. So that's a lot of money talking. So we'll see what the money says in Kansas City and Atlanta and Chicago with the Blackhawks and some universities.
All right, let's finish with something fun for a moment. I don't always answer these questions on Twitter, but I was compelled to the past couple of days because of the age they use, and it was just like so perfect, and there was absolutely no debate in my mind, so I retweeted these out, and I wanted to ask you guys the same question because I had some fun reading responses after I retweeted it. Two different accounts tweeted the question, who was your favorite baseball player when you were 10 years old? Who was your favorite football player when you were 10 years old? And like, it's like they used the perfect age for me because obviously 10 years old, 1980, you know, I turned 10 at the end of 1982. Well, George Brett. And that's not even close. That's right in the heyday of the George Brett era. You know, he'd already hit 390, still had some great years ahead of him, but that was George Brett time. So for me, it was George Brett. So let's start there. Who was your favorite baseball player at the age of 10?
For me,
yes,
Bo Jackson.
Nate.
And now you.
No, that's fine. Bo Jackson, Nate.
Gosh, what was Bo Jackson's rookie year? Well, I'm trying to remember now.
I think it was 87.
Yeah.
When were you born, Nate?
I was born in 76. That's why I'm trying to. I don't know if Bo Jackson had become my favorite athlete yet by the time, because that
was
1980.
Your favorite baseball player then?
I'm looking at his baseball reference page. He debuted in 86, but only played 25.
I was going to say his rookie card is in the Topps extended edition of 86, but his future
was not your favorite. But yeah.
Yeah, I don't think he had vaulted into my favorite athlete, you know, in the world at that time. My favorite baseball player at that time had to be George Brett.
Ken Griffey Jr.
All right. Okay. Now, this was the one because, again, of the timing of it, it was very easy for me. But favorite football player when I was 10 years old, Joe Delaney. Because and then you think about it, in 1981 was his rookie year, and UPI voted him rookie of the year. You know, he had the 1,000-yard season. He made the Pro Bowl. You know, there wasn't a whole lot to root about with the Chiefs, but man, then Joe Delaney on the scene. And so 81, he had that fantastic year. And then again, I turned 10 during the 82 season, and that was the strike-shortened season. And I remember he had surgery for a detached retina. And so he only had 8 games or so. And like everyone was all fired up to see him healthy and come back in 83. Then, of course, he died tragically before that could happen. But November of 1982, when I turned 10, Joe Delaney, easy answer. What about you guys? Favorite football player when you were 10 years old?
For me, it was Bo Jackson. Look, man,
wow.
Like you said, the timing. I turned 10 in 1988, and again, I was just looking at the pages to make sure. And that Monday night game where he ran over Bosworth and, and ran down the tunnel in Seattle, that was in 1987. That was the first game that I remember sneaking out of my room to watch without my parents knowing. I don't know that it was the first, but it's the first one that I remember. And so obviously that really stuck with me. He was such a big freaking deal, man. Like the fact that he was playing both sports, and that one of them was, you know, for the baseball team that I was following, that I was rooting for. I mean, he was everything to me from 10, really, until now.
Current day. Sam and I could not be in more lockstep on this. The only difference is I was 12 at the time instead of 10, so I can't answer it.
I'm just now realizing that Sam's older than me.
Oh. Well, who was it for you guys?
So Carlos Carson in 1986 was my favorite football player.
Mine's easy. In 1990, Derek Thomas. For me, that was it. You know, it's Derek Thomas is the Chiefs defense is the start. Of, you know, 90 was good year.
Oh yeah, that's. I mean, hell yes. Let me just read to you a couple of things.
By the way, Sam, you're older than me. Just FYI.
Mm-hmm.
That's good.
Good enough.
Just to remind people of some of the things Joe Delaney did his rookie year and why he may have been a young Stevens favorite player. See. After coming off the bench to record 101 rushing yards in his initial NFL action at New England, he ran for 106 and had 104 receiving yards in his first professional start against the Oakland Raiders. So his first start, 100 on the ground, 100 in the air. Then, October 18, 1981, against the Denver Broncos, Delaney broke loose for a 75-yard touchdown run, but an offside penalty caused the play to be called back. Then on the second play after the penalty, Delaney then scored on an 82-yard touchdown run, which was the longest rushing play from scrimmage in the 81 season. Following his record-setting 196-yard rushing performance against Houston, Oilers defensive end and future Hall of Famer Elvin Bethea was quoted in saying, "I've played against the best. O.J. Simpson, Gale Sayers, Walter Payton, and Delaney ranks right up there with him. He's great with a capital G." So while I was here about Joe Delaney and for people that were too young to watch him play, I just wanted to share that and give a sampling of why he was so wildly popular and why he would have been my favorite when I was 10 years old.
Yeah.
How about that quote, by the way?
Yeah, dude, that raised my eyebrows. Like, wow. Like, that's high praise, man. That's insane. Yeah.
Sam Ehlinger. Are you doing well? Is everything good?
Everything's great, man. Yeah, I cannot complain about much at all. Everything is great. I hope the same is true for you guys.
Very good. Very good weekend. Very wonderful weekend.
I need an emotional diuretic.
Yeah, Nate got to a certain point, you know, and then soccer hit him right in the mouth. So he's ready to fire back on Friday, though. I can tell you that.
That's right. I'll be ready. I will have loosened my emotional bowels by then.
Wow. Thank you very much, Sam Ehlinger, for your time.
I appreciate it, guys.
That's Sam Ehlinger from the Kansas City Star. Up next, Adam Teicher from ESPN will talk football with us on Sports Radio 810 WHB.